Blog Talk Radio
presents a Blog Radio Show.
Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton, and I thank you so much for joining us tonight and hanging out with us. As always, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. We've got another great show for you guys tonight. But before we start, let me please say thank you again to author and music director Chris May for joining us last night. He is a Carpenters historian, and along with Mike Sidoni Lennox and Richard Carpenter himself, they have a book out, The Carpenters, The Musical Legacy, and it sounds like a great book full of pictures that have never been seen before by the Carpenters. So, and we just had a great time last night. So if you get a chance, listen back to the show. But tonight, we're going to have a lot of fun, I think. I know I am, talking about the legendary actress, comedian, singer, Rosemarie, and who else but to talk about her own daughter, Georgiana Nupi Rodriguez. Georgiana, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Sorry for that long introduction there.
That's okay.
But listen, thank you so much. I mean, I was dying to get you on last month when the centennial was the virtual centennial party was going to be on August 15th, which was your mom's 100th birthday.
Right.
Oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been great. I didn't get a chance to see it yet. Did you guys have a good time?
It was absolutely terrific. And I think you can see it on YouTube right now.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
I just didn't get a chance. And
I think you can see it. And we had a great time. We had a lot of people that were on, including the producer director who did her documentary, Wait for Your Laugh.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful film. And he was on, and it was an absolutely fabulous night. And I think that she would have loved it.
It was, I'm sure,
celebrating her 100th birthday, but of course she's been in the business for 90 years. So
right. Well, it's funny growing up as a kid watching Dick Van Dyke and the Dinah Shore show. I mean, I had no idea that that was a vaudeville star from the age of three from silent film days. It's just amazing, and she was a huge singer at the age of 3 to 5 and got a 7-year contract at the age of 5. Is that right?
That's absolutely true. She had her own radio show on NBC, and it was extremely popular. NBC loved it, but then a lot of people couldn't believe that it was a child that was singing.
Right.
So NBC put her out on the road. And she wound up working vaudeville. And so she was playing theaters where they do 5, 6, 7 shows a day.
Wow.
And when they got to Cincinnati, I think it was, her father, who then became her manager, there was the child labor law, and he wound up getting arrested. So he got arrested, I think, 139 times or something.
And she would
go out there and sing, and he would get arrested, and then they'd bail him out, and then he'd come back, and she would do another show, and this basically went on. So that part of it was fascinating in the fact that they had a child labor law.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but she loved playing vaudeville because of the talent that was there and the people and everything. She absolutely loved it.
And her father, I think, was a vaudevillian as well. Wasn't he an actor in vaudeville?
Well, no, not really. He actually was kind of a member of the mob.
Oh.
To be honest.
No wonder your mom wound up with Bugsy and Al Capone.
Well, it's not a gang. It's a club situation.
Right.
And,
right.
So the mob loved her. She was playing in one theater and a big limo pulled up and it was Al Capone's limo and he wanted to see her. He wanted to meet her and he was having a party and she went over there and his wife was there and everything. And he just looked at her father and said, you know, you take care of her.
Mm.
So she became like the baby of the mob and
yeah.
They absolutely loved her, took care of her for a very long, long time.
And was she the first person to perform at the Flamingo or first female or first child for that matter?
Bugsy Siegel had just finished the Flamingo and he mm-hmm. booked her, Jimmy Durante, and Xavier Cugat. And so they had an opening night at the Flamingo, and here was this fancy hotel and everything. It was out in the middle of nowhere. And they flew in all these stars and flew in all these, you know, Gable, and it was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And everybody in the casino was dressed in tuxedos and all of that. It was extremely nice.
When people had class.
Well, everybody was wearing tuxedos and women were wearing beautiful dresses and everything at that time, except the problem was after 2 days, they all went home.
Hmm.
So, they all got on a plane and they all went home. So she always used to say, you haven't lived until you've seen Jimmy Durante performed for 12 people because the locals didn't know how to handle this. Here was
right.
this big fancy hotel and everything and everybody walking around all of the staff dressed in tuxedos and everything else. And they weren't quite sure how to handle this.
Hmm.
So it took a while for that to kind of catch on.
Yeah.
But yes, she and Jimmy and Xavier Cugat were the three first performers in Vegas at that hotel. So technically, she and Jimmy and Xavier opened up Las Vegas.
Very cool. Oh, my God. And what a life she must have had, not to mention hers, but yours, being around all these legends when you were growing up. I mean, oh my God, how crazy was that? And to you, they weren't, obviously. They were just friends of moms and dads.
No,
you know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You're exactly correct. Because to me, you know, my parents had a wonderful marriage. They truly, truly did. And they used to have in those days, which I don't know if they really do it anymore, but they used to have dinner parties.
Yeah.
And my mother loved to cook, coming from an Italian background.
Yeah.
And so she would cook. And so, of course, in the early years, my father was a very well-known musician. And he played with Bing Crosby and Frank and all of that. And he was extremely well-known. So in the early years, most of their friends were musicians. And but then once she hit television, then it became more of a different kind of group, you know. Although there were still a bunch of, but I was never a star-struck person, you know.
Mm-hmm.
there was one story that I can tell that, you know, she was very close with Lucille Ball. And she and Lucy were really good friends. And Lucy called her up one day and said something to the fact of that they were shooting a movie called The Long, Long Trailer.
Oh, yes.
And could they stop by on the way home because they were shooting up way up in the valley or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And could they? And so she said, Desi stopped by before they went up there and brought up two or three bottles of wine and put it there. And he said, okay, you know, we'll see you later. Okay, fine. And then after they got done shooting, then they came into the house and they both performed a scene from The Long, Long Trailer right in our living room. And Lucy was saying, oh, you know, this is such a great scene and we had so much fun doing it and all that kind of stuff. And I was there and I watched it and, you know, they basically left. And my mother looked at me and she said, you know, what do you think? Is Lucille Ball and Desi Arnett? And I said, yeah, it was fun, but I got to go in and do my homework.
Right,
and
right.
She went, does this not mean anything to you?
Oh, yeah, you just poo-pooed it. It was like, yeah, no, I got to go,
really.
Like you said. I know. And since she was so close with Lucy, I'm guessing you were friends with Lucy and Desi as well.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of the question.
I said, since your mom was so close with Lucy, I'm guessing you were friends with her children, Lucy and Desi.
Well, Lucy was younger than me, and Lucy had told my mother one day that she was going to take, and they referred to her as little Lucy.
Little. Yeah.
And
little Ricky,
and,
right?
but it was little Desi. I always heard little Lucy, and,
yeah.
and she was going to take little Lucy and to Marine Land, which was a park here in by the beach, I think my mother said something to the fact of, you know, I've got something, you know, why don't you take Noopy and all of that. So I wound up going to Marine Land with Lucille Ball and little Lucy, who was in a stroller, I think, at that time, because I think I was only like seven, something like that. And Lucy's mother, I want to say her name is Dee Dee. And so I went to Marine Land with Lucille Ball and her mother. And then my mother met us later and took me home. And she, you know, she said, how was it? I said, oh, it's fun. You know, it's fun. We walked around. It's fun. I mean, the thing about Lucy, and they were such great friends, truly. Lucy called her up one day and said, you know, they've asked me to teach a class at UCLA to teach one class on comedy. And she goes, I can't do this by myself. You got to help me.
Oh, wow.
So my mother went down and helped Lucy do this class at UCLA on comedy. And I do remember her saying, oh, I got to go help Lucy do a class on comedy. And I said, well, that's going to be something.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Lucy, in later years, you know, they talked a lot. And Lucy was a big backgammon fan. She was always looking for people to play backgammon. She even got me on the phone one day and said, you know, do you think you can come over and play backgammon? Well, I was going to college at the time, and I said, well, you know, I'll try, but I never did do it. Now I kind of regret that I didn't do it. But
for sure,
she was always looking for somebody to play backgammon with. She loved backgammon.
Nice. Now
so,
you said before.
I'm sorry. You're really breaking up.
Really? I'm sorry. You fine. That's crazy. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yes, fine. It just kind of goes, that's what I'm hearing. So,
well, I'm so
okay.
Sorry. I don't know why that could be.
Well, that's all right. We'll just keep going. Just, you know, I'm sorry, but I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry.
I said you mentioned, obviously, I introduced you as well as Georgiana Noopy. How did you get the name Noopy?
Yeah.
I know, but let's let everybody else know.
Okay, well, my father was very into nicknames. He, all of his friends had a certain nickname. And he, like his friend that had a boat, he called him Skipper, and you know, all of his musicians' friends, he always had nicknames for him. Well, his nickname for my nose was always a noop.
Mm.
Oh, you got something on your noop. And I guess when I was a baby, I used to get food on my nose. I don't, you know,
yeah.
That's kind of what I was told. You know, you got food on your noop. It became Nooper, and then it became Noopy. So Noopy became easier because Georgiana always seemed a little formal for, you know, friends. You know, even when the song Georgie Girl came out and all that kind of stuff.
Love that song,
You know, I always went by Georgiana in school, but my friends always called me Noopy. So
to this day, you're still Noopy. Yep. Now, before we go,
you know, the fans basically call me Noopy also.
Yeah.
Her fans.
Yeah. Well, before we go into all some fun stuff that went on behind the scenes in your lifetime, I want to let everybody know that the 100th birthday party that you did online was really to celebrate to celebrate the release of a new CD as well. It's Rosemarie Sings, the complete Mercury recordings and more. So how cool is that to have that all in one place?
Well, you know, when we were doing the documentary, we had so much material. It took us three years to actually do it. And we had so much material because she saved everything. We had 65 scrapbooks. We had 25 cans of film.
Wow.
We had film cans of 8mm film because my parents loved to take home movies.
Mm.
And so we had that. And then, of course, we had audio recordings. And we had cassettes and reel-to-reel. And it was just insane. I mean, it truly, truly was. It was research that was unbelievable. I mean, 65 scrapbooks, which, I mean, plus her memory was so good that she could talk about playing a club in the 50s. And she said, well, I played in August of 1954, you know, 52 or whatever. And we could go to that scrapbook. And in that scrapbook would be her review, a picture of the club, whatever.
Everything.
I mean, her memory was unbelievable. I mean, up until the day she passed, she was as sharp as a tack. I mean, just unbelievable. She could describe, somebody once asked her, but you know, what was the Copacabana like? What did it look like? She basically described the wallpaper, described how the tables were, said where the cash register was, and the fact that it had a bullet hole in it.
God, you remember it down to the last detail. Wow. Well, you know what? With everything that the life she had, thank God she was able to remember every memory like that. How could you forget that amazing life?
True.
I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah.
How could you forget? Oh, my goodness. Well, I looked up the album because I wanted to play a song or two for folks that never heard Rosemarie Sing. Because, like I said, I didn't know she was started out as a singer myself as Baby Rosemarie. So, and when I looked, it said the CD is on back order. So it must be doing well.
It really is. The fans, you know, she sang on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
And the fans, and what is amazing is that when she passed away, her fan base on Facebook was 35,000. It's now over 65,000.
Wow.
And
she kept
said,
up
oh my
with,
God,
she kept up
like
with social media, right? Yeah, she kept up with social media on her own, didn't she?
Absolutely. You know, Kathy Brown, who also produced the album, kept her up to date on all of the social media things, and she really developed a marvelous fan group. I have learned a lot about fans. I had no idea the loyalty and what is out there as far as someone that is truly a fan. And
right.
When her 100th birthday, and we had known that we had the audio tapes, and we had transferred a couple of them during the film, but mostly we were working on, you know, the film and pictures and all of that. So when her 100th birthday came around, Kathy said, you know, we have to do something. And she said, the fans, every time a Dick Van Dyke show would show where she sang, mm-hmm. the fans would go nuts. They go, oh, my God, we have to get more of her singing. We have to hear her sing. And so Kathy went through the tracks and everything else and wound up sending them over to London to have them cleaned up as best we could because they were old. And we had found some other recordings and things that I never even knew existed. I had no idea that she had written two or three songs, which are on there.
Oh, nice.
And and she says, we have to really do this for the fans.
Mm.
So when we announced that we were going to do a pre-order, we had basically started a pre-order on Amazon. The fans went nuts. And all of a sudden it became, you know, we have to have it. There is one of the fans wrote and said, I absolutely love it. I play it all day long in the house. I just walk around or if I'm cleaning house, I have it playing. And they absolutely love it. And I sat and listened to 29 tracks. So many of them I had never heard.
Wow.
And I realized what a great singer she was. I mean, even in later years, I mean, let's go past all of the baby stuff. But, I mean, there's a recording Set 'Em Up, Joe, There's No One in the Place Except You and Me. You know, one for my baby, okay?
Mm.
And when I heard that, when I played it back, and she sings the heck out of it, she really does.
Yeah.
And it's a song that Frank always sang in his act. He always called it a quote-unquote saloon song. And so when I listened to it, and she sings it, so, and then I said to Kathy, I said, when did she sing this? And she said, early 50s. And I said, how many women would record, it's 2:45, there's no one in the place except you and me, so Set 'Em Up, Joe.
Hmm.
I said, a woman wouldn't sing this song.
Yeah.
And she said, and so I said, but again, she was doing things that no other woman would do.
Right.
In that era. So,
yeah. Way ahead of her time.
And and she sings it so well. I mean, there are a lot of personal songs on there. The song that she sang after my father passed away because they had a wonderful marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And she went into a major, major depression. She actually wasn't going to finish the last year of the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Really?
And John Rich, who was the director, came over to the house and sat with her and literally talked her into it all night long.
Yeah.
And when I went to bed, he was there. And when I woke up, they were still at the table and they were still talking. So,
no.
talk, he basically talked her into doing the show, she said, well, she goes, I guess I'd better because she said, I don't want to get fired or whatever she said. I don't know. But she was in a major depression.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she said to him, How can I go out and be funny? And he said, you know, and I don't know what he said to her, but anyway, she went back and finished the last year because the show was only on for 5 years.
Yeah.
So it was only 5 years of her life.
Right, right.
And,
seemed longer at the time, didn't it? Seemed like there were
well,
more shows.
Well, yes, because as, you know, you and I are talking right now, it's being shown somewhere. Trust me.
Right,
it's being,
exactly.
And that was something else that I insisted that go into the film. You know, the whole residual schedule then was totally, totally different than it is now.
Absolutely.
And after 1968, she didn't make a dollar off of that film.
Wow.
She didn't make a dollar. Maury didn't make a dollar. Even Mary didn't make a dollar because
wow.
it was only the people that owned the show.
Yeah.
So
well,
every time that part would...
Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
Yes, go on.
No, go ahead.
Every time that part would come up in the movie saying that she hadn't made any money, the audience would gasp because they all thought she was rich.
Right, right. Well, look at the
and
right now
really
in the industry, they don't get much. They don't get much residuals either now, worse than then.
When I think of the shows like Friends and Cheers, who really set up their own thing. I mean,
right.
those you know kids on Friends will never have to work another day in their life.
Yeah,
but
weren't they the ones that did the syndication deal, and then everybody in the past got
yes.
the syndication rights too? Or am I thinking of something else?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right because it was an amazing thing, and you know, and of course, you know, if Cheers, you know. $1 million an episode they were
right.
getting paid, you know.
Was, mm-hmm.
I think my mother was making scale at the time doing the Dick Van Dyke Show. So.
That's crazy.
But,
oh, my God.
Yeah. But, well, you know, and truly she became a single mother, so she worked.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
she had to.
Yeah, I guess Hollywood Squares kind of like got her out of that to make her laugh again, I mean, to some degree.
Hollywood Squares was extremely helpful. She had just a real quick story. She had, you know, the show business grouping is really amazing. I don't know if it's that way now. I would suspect it's not, but
mm-hmm.
You know, they all kind of looked after each other, and everybody
yeah.
knew that she was in this depression
funk. Mm-hmm.
And she got a call one day from Dean Martin, who was doing mm-hmm. his show. And he said, I want you to come on the show and I want you to sing. Because they, of course, knew that she was also a singer back in the
right.
50s because she was playing the, you know, nightclubs with these guys.
Right.
And
right.
She said, no, Dean, I can't. Yeah, there's no way. No, you got to do it, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you pick out the song. He said, we'll get it arranged. He said, I'll sit there with you when you sing it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Dean, and she really hemmed and hawed over it. And she said, all right. So she picked out the song Little Girl Blue.
Mm.
And she sings the heck out of it. And it's on the CD when she sang it on the show.
Nice. Night. Well,
and
I love when she did. I love
right
when she did
her.
Come Rain. I'm sorry. I've been dying to tell you that I love when she did Come Rain and Come Shine on Dick Van Dyke Show.
Oh yeah,
that was.
You
nice.
Know the thing that she loved about Dick Van Dyke, as far as singing is concerned, and I'll just throw all those throw. She, Dick and Mary always pre-recorded theirs.
Right.
And if she could sing it live, she wanted to sing it live. And I would
right.
say maybe she pre-recorded one, if that. But she loved singing it live because they had a live audience for that show also.
Mm-hmm.
So she was performing again. She loved performing, loved it. And they go, well, you know, don't you want to go in the studio and record it? She goes, is there any way that you can get some of the musicians here and I'll sing it live?
Yeah.
And they went, well, are you sure you want to do that? And she went, yeah, I want to do it.
Wow.
So
that's talent. That's talent.
99.9.
That's talent, right? That's talent for you. I said, that's talent for you.
Yes, it's old school, too, you know?
Yeah.
And she had confidence in herself. She always had confidence in herself because she always knew what she was. You know, one of the things, again, that she says in the film, she says, you know, that she never wanted to use a last name. It was always, you know, her first name. And she said, I was the first. And she said, everybody, Cher came later, Madonna.
Yeah.
You know, she said, all of them came later with, you know, the one name. But she said, I was the first.
She was the first for a lot of things. But
she really was.
Yeah, yeah. And she kind of broke the mold for women in the entertainment industry, that's for sure.
Well, you know, one of the things that Dick Van Dyke did do was the fact that it showed a woman that was on an equal basis. She was actually the first one on that, too. Later on became Marlo and of course, Mary after that. But she was actually working in a group with two guys. She was making the same salary.
Hmm.
And she wasn't just sitting there being a secretary. She was writing.
Right.
And so she was on the same level. And I cannot tell you how many women have come up and said, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have written. I wouldn't have become this person.
Wow.
I wouldn't have become that, including Marta Kaufman, who produced a little show called Friends.
Yep. Yep.
And Paula Poundstone, one day we were at some function and we walked out and Paula was behind the barrier outside, you know, like the fans are outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And I walked out and I said to my mother, I said, that's Paula Poundstone over there. And she was like, and I don't know how she got it, but somehow she had gotten a hold of a Dick Van Dyke show script. And she wanted my mother to sign it. And she was waiting out there.
Wow.
And she was so excited to meet her, she could barely talk.
Wow.
And
well, your mother was a legend,
Jane,
that's
Jane
for sure.
Jane Lynch, I think, mentioned my mother in her act. She said something to us, or she wrote us and said, you know, I always mention your mother in my act, because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. So it gave women a thing of, I can actually do this.
Right.
And
it was
an amazing thing, and she loved being that person. She really did.
Yeah, well, who wouldn't? I mean, look, she broke the barrier on so many things and was an influence to a lot of people, and just, again, the first of many firsts. She did so many firsts. So I want to play
really
this song,
true.
And I want to play this song, and it's not when she's a little baby Rosemary. It's a little older, and I want you to tell me how old she is when it's over in this, because I didn't want to go too far back, and I wanted to get it like right in the middle when before she was.
Well, I'll try. I'll guess.
I'm guessing she's maybe 9 in this. So check this out, guys. It's Sentimental Gentleman from Georgia with Rosemary. Enjoy it.
He's hanging around and now
How cool is that? How old is she in there? How old is she, you think?
I am going to make a guesstimate because of the grovel that she was doing. I would say 7 or 8.
I was thinking 8, 9, yeah, yeah. And the,
yeah,
it's still,
yeah,
oh, I love that little growl.
She started the grovel thing probably around 6 or 7. So, and once she got into that, she kind of enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, she could growl her voice like unbelievable at that age.
And,
she really could.
And she sounded so good at such a young age. I mean, even when in the younger songs that I saw her do, you know, I was looking up some videos to play some music, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't. She's got to be about 4 years old in there, and she sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, she sounded like
a
kid's voice, but not kiddie. You know, it was real songs. They were real songs, and, you know, they weren't childish and just great. Oh, my goodness. What a career. Oh,
well,
my
that's
goodness.
Why they put her out on the road, because people didn't buy it. People thought it was a small person up there singing, you know, small person that was singing, and it really wasn't a child.
Right,
and,
right.
It was.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, well, because they couldn't
see
her.
We have one clipping which Kathy had found in the scrapbook, and she sent it to me one night with a OMG on the thing because we hadn't seen it. And it was a quote from George Gershwin saying,
"Wow,
one of the best singers that has natural rhythm is Baby Rose Marie." This was from George Gershwin.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, my God.
Wow.
I said, where did you? And she said, it's in the scrapbook. And I said, how the heck did we miss that?
Mm.
I said, good.
Wow.
Grief. That's George Gershwin. That's not some schlock, you know.
Oh, and I would think that your mother loved George Gershwin too. I mean,
she absolutely adored him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she absolutely adored him. She loved his Concerto in F.
Mm.
Absolutely loved it. She used to. She always said that she absolutely loved that, and it was one of the pieces that Gershwin wrote, and of course, you know, American in Paris and all of that. But
yeah,
she just loved Concerto in F, and I had no idea. None of us knew that this little clipping was in the scrapbook.
That's amazing.
And
oh, my God.
I said, that's going into the CD notes because people are not going to believe that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
For
George
Gershwin to single her out as Baby Rose Marie, as having natural rhythm and natural, it just, you know, she was...
you could hear
she
it
was
in
really
that song.
A phenom, I guess you would call her.
In that song we just played, you can hear it. She's a natural. You could hear it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, she always, as a child, even when she was an adult, she'd always tap her foot. Always.
Hmm.
And then, of course, later years when she did Four Girls Four with Margaret Whiting and Helen O'Connell and Rosemary Clooney, she was back into her element of performing for a live audience. And just loved it.
Right. Now,
and they were filling theaters, 6,000 seat theaters.
Wow.
I went on the road, and because I was shooting this segment for CBS on them, and I couldn't believe it.
Wow.
I said, and they go, yeah, you know, we're sold out. And I'm telling you, like these huge venues that are out there, they were filling them. And I'm going, you've got to be kidding. But there was a lot of people that wanted to hear good music, you know.
Yeah.
And
now, since she was...
And that's what they did.
Right. And she was multi-talented in so many ways. But would you say singing was her main love in her career?
You know, I would have to say that she certainly loved it. When she was performing in nightclubs and the owners wanted her to stay on longer, and my father was
arrested
here at the time, and he said, you know, he said, you're going to have to do more than just come out there and just sing. And he said, you know, and so she, of course, she and Maury Amsterdam were like brother and sister. And Maury was always known, you know, Maury wrote for every comic in the world. And he was a fabulous writer. And so she said, well, I guess I better start to do some comedy then. So she called up Maury, and Maury worked with her with jokes and whatever. And that's when she put in comedy. But one of the things that she did, especially in Four Girls Four, when I was watching, she would ad lib, and she would pick on a guy in the audience and say, you know, what's your name? And just start enjoying being out there.
Yeah.
And you know, the people just loved it. So she was good at what she did. Dick Van Dyke used to always say he learned timing from her. Which is why the name of her film is called Wait for Your Laugh.
Wait for the Laugh, right.
Because they had a live audience. Well, Dick would start to say the next line, and she would say to him, no, no, Dick, wait for the laugh. Don't talk on top of the laugh. So he, you know, I mean, in the film, he says, I learned timing from her. I learned, he said, she would say to me, wait for your laugh. So I think that she enjoyed comedy. I think she enjoyed it because it was comedy. Anybody that does comedy will say it's the hardest thing in the world to do. Anybody can act and cry and be sad. They don't think that that's hard. You know, that's not hard, because if you're a true actress or whatever, you can do that.
Right.
But comedy is timing. And she would say that. So it's hard for me to say. I mean, she loves singing. That's how she basically got started. But
yeah.
If I had to say so, I would have to say comedy, because comedy, she would say comedy is hard, and anybody that did comedy would say that.
Right.
It's not that easy. You know, we make it look easy.
Right.
But it's not that easy, because every joke has to be timed correctly, and the punchline has to be timed.
Right, right.
And that, and that's tough. It's not just getting up and singing a song.
Yeah.
And
well,
I think...
Go ahead.
I think that's, you know, I think that's the answer. You know, I really do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would think that it's so hard to choose, you know, when you have so much talent. It all made her happy, I'm sure. But I wanted to go back to when earlier when you said mom was a great cook and loved to cook. So what was your favorite meal? And do you cook? Are you a big cooker? And do you have a lot of people over all
I
the
am.
Time? Oh,
I love to cook. And of course, my grandmother was the best cook in the world, because she could take any leftover and turn it into a gourmet meal. But I would stand there and I would watch them.
Right.
I would watch them both, because the parties that they had, the dinner parties, especially if my grandmother was here, my grandmother would start cooking and just go. And literally, this is the truth, I would come out from my room, because I was a kid and the quote unquote adults are out there.
Yeah.
And after dinner, I would come out and the guests were on the floor. And I would say, why are they on the floor? And
yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, I ate too much. Oh, my God, I can't move. I can't. And they would, I swear to you, they were on the floor. And so finally, my mother one day said to my grandmother, she says, "Mother, you can't keep cooking like this. People don't eat like this anymore. They can't eat as much, you know." And my grandmother would throw her hand up in the air and go, they don't know how to eat.
Yeah.
And that's what she'd say. But, yes, I thoroughly enjoy entertaining. I make a great sauce. I really do. I learned from two of the best.
Yeah.
And I have had friends come over, and when I cook, I follow their advice and the way that they did it. And I mean, I knew how to make the meatballs from scratch. I knew how to make the. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
I learned a lot, and
yeah.
I would watch them both because they both encompass the kitchen.
Right.
And I just stand back and watch, and then, or I would ask a question, you know. My grandmother would make homemade cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving, which I still do to this day.
Nice.
And it smells up the house. I mean, it's just great. I mean, I was very lucky that I was raised like that, you know. It was strict, but it was good.
And considering your mom and dad were both entertainers, I mean, you had a pretty normal life otherwise, other than having all these legends coming in and out your door all the time, but you had a pretty normal life.
I didn't, you know, something, you know, people sometimes would say to me, you know, well, does your mother crack jokes at home? You know, like, and I said, no, I said, because
she's my mom.
When we were home, it was a family. We sat down. We had a dinner at night. I mean, it was a family time.
Right.
And I was raised that way. I see kids nowadays that are running all over restaurants, and I think to myself, oh my God, my grandmother would put me through a wall if I did that.
I hate that. Oh my God. It's like,
I swear to you, just 2 or 3 days ago, I was in Santa Barbara, and here's this kid running all over. We were having a nice lunch, and this kid's running all over the place, and he goes and he gets a clump of dirt, and he goes and he threw it in his father's water, and nothing, you know?
It's amazing.
If I was told you sit here and you be quiet and you don't say anything, I sat there and I was quiet. There was never any question about I'm going to do that. And when she was doing Top Banana at the Winter Garden, I was there and I was sitting in a chair and I was backstage and I was about 6 years old at this time. And I was sitting in a chair, and she said, okay, you know, you sit in the chair, and you know, and she would go out, she would do the show, and the chorus girls would come off, you know, and they would try to talk to me or try to, you know, and I would put my finger up to my mouth and go, shh, I can't. I'd sit in the chair, you know, I go, no, I can't, you know.
Right.
And,
I know.
I just, that's just how I was brought up. I mean, I was brought up, the lady down the street, Mrs. Brown, and she said, oh, you can call me Mary. And I said, no, I can't. I couldn't call her by her first name. She was Mrs. Brown to me.
Yeah.
And still is to this day.
Yep.
I still refer to her.
As Mrs. Brown.
You know, Mrs. Brown. So she said, well, you know, and every time I go, Mrs. Brown, could I? And so she goes, really, you can call me Mary. And I said, no, I could not do it.
Right.
Could not do it.
Well, that's
and,
the way we were raised.
Her
that's
son
the way
was
we were,
the same
yeah.
way. Her, you know, her son used to call my mother Mrs. Guy.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's the way
he
we
never
were raised.
Called her by her first name.
Right.
Never.
That's the way we were raised. Respect, respect, and listen to your parents now. I mean, like you said, you go to a restaurant. I'd be embarrassed. I how do you let your child run around like that and not say anything? Oh, my God.
I don't understand it. I see kids running around, and a perfect example was that kid, you know, a couple of days ago. I said, oh, my God. And I think to myself, if my grandmother saw that,
mm-hmm.
or my father or my mother saw that, they would, first of all, I would never do it. I would never, ever do it. And I was taught from 5, 6 years old, you know, if you're told to sit there and be quiet, then fine, then sit there and be quiet. Don't get up and start running around all over the place.
And,
you know, the
listen,
father had to go look for him at one point because the kid was running all over the place.
Yeah. See, I find it very disrespectful.
Because the food came.
Yeah, I find it very disrespectful. I mean, everybody's out to enjoy themselves. Who knows what they're getting away from to go out to eat, and then you got to deal with that? No, no. I mean, as an adult, it's disgusting how you could allow that. I actually went to a restaurant one time.
Well, yeah, you and I agree on that.
Yeah, not to get off topic, but I went to a restaurant one time, and I had hired a babysitter to come and watch my kids so I could be kidless for an evening. And they sat me next to a kid. And I said, listen, I don't mean to be rude by any means, but I came out to get away from kids. Can you sit me somewhere else, please? And the mother heard me, and she was very insulted. I said, you'll see one day when you get to go out.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah,
because,
very disrespectful.
They absolutely get insulted over it because I guess, you know, I'm sorry. I was raised the way that I was raised. I'm very happy that I was raised that way.
Me too.
Because
Me too.
I have respect for, you know, I always had growing up respect for older people and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I would never consider calling them by their first name. Ever.
Never.
Because
never.
I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, Tommy, who is still my friend, still refers to my mother as Mrs. Guy. I mean, it's just something that was just put into our brains. And you know, that's it. I could never call his mother by her first name. It just, I couldn't do it.
No,
and
no.
And it took
like,
a long time. I mean, I had to get past 21 before I would even think about it.
Right, right. Just to
because
think about
I
it.
I always call people by their, but you know, Mrs. So and So, Mr. So and So.
Right.
You know, my, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood. It was Mrs. Guy or Mr. Guy, as far as my parents were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Never called them by their.
Right.
Never.
Right. Oh, you didn't answer my question. What was your mom's favorite meal that you loved so much? That she made.
Oh well, it would have to be the sauce. Are you kidding?
Well,
it would have to be, you know, you got to have the right sauce,
fun.
You know.
Yep, you got to have the sauce. If you don't have good sauce, everything sucks.
Well, that's it. Everything, you know, I mean, without hesitation, I would have to say the sauce because, you know, it was one of those things that cooked for, you know, maybe a couple of days and.
Yeah.
I used to laugh because when I saw the movie, you know, The Godfather and stuff like that, and they had these big pots of sauce, and they would dip, and they would dip the bread in it. You know, I used to do the same thing.
Right.
I'd go and get the bread, you know, and dip it in the sauce. And I mean, and the homemade meatballs were just fantastic. I mean,
nice.
I go to restaurants and I have the meatballs and I go, they can't touch mine.
Yeah,
they
no.
really can't.
Exactly.
And,
oh my goodness.
It's you know the and when I would have friends over, and I would make you know I would do them. I had these friends. They go, you really got to bottle this thing. You really got to bottle this stuff because it's like
crazy. Rosemary sauce. There you go.
Oh, my God. I cannot tell you how many times I was told to bottle it. It was really something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. I would have to say it's the sauce, but you know, Grandma used to make brajol and
oh,
all
good
the
stuff.
Oh my God, did
yeah.
she cook? Oh yeah, yeah. And I just watch her. You know, I just watch her, and it's. Oh boy, she was an unbelievable cook. She truly was. And then, of course, you know, my mother learned from her, and then
yeah.
Grandma lived in Jersey, and right across from the George Washington Bridge in Fort Lee.
Fort Lee, yep, I'm close to Fort Lee. Yeah.
Are you? Okay. Well,
yeah.
You know, in those days, it was a very Italian neighborhood. It really was.
Mm. Well, now it's very Asian. It's very Asian. It's like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if they call it Little Chinatown or something, but it is very Asian. If you go there, lots of Asian stores, great restaurants and everything. So, yeah, it's changed over the years, that's for sure. But
well,
still a nice
God,
town.
You know, I was there about 5 or 6 years ago, and the bakery is still there, the one that Miller's.
Oh.
And it's on Anderson Avenue, I can tell you that. And they make a crumb coffee cake that is a killer.
Oh,
and
I'll have to try it.
In New York, and I called them up, and I ordered like two of them. I was going to bring them home. Because the thing about my grandmother is when she lived in Jersey and she would come out to California, she would get off the plane with bags of food. Was never luggage was secondary, but
yeah.
It was bags of food because she said you can't get the food in California like you can in New York or Jersey. I swear to you, she would come off it just shopping bags of food.
I laugh because my grandmother did the same thing. She'd show up my house full of food too. Like here's this, that,
go.
And the other thing.
There you go.
Yep.
It must be something, but it's we would pick her up at the airport, and she would walk down the stairs because in those days they didn't have the things that go up to the plane, and she would walk down the stairs, and she always conned somebody into helping her with the bags. And she was an amazing person, and I go, oh my gosh, look at Grandma's got the bags. Oh my God, we're gonna be eating for a year.
Oh God, it's funny because we used to say the same thing when we knew my grandmother was coming. Grandma's coming, she's bringing food. We couldn't wait to get home. Yeah, we couldn't wait to
bags
get home from school.
Of food.
Yep.
Bags of food. She would, and it's absolutely true. You couldn't get the food in California. The taste. They're still trying to make a pizza in this town, and they can't.
Right.
And I'll tell you something.
The good old days, right?
Oh God, you know, like I said, I'm so lucky that I was raised during that part of time.
Yeah,
because it was a great time. And
now,
I wanted to ask
you about you said that you used a lot of her Rosemary's, your mom's like scrapbooks and everything to put the CD together. I'm imagining you have everything she's ever had.
Yeah, we had a tremendous amount of material. Now the scrapbooks have been digitized, all 65 of them. And the pages have been digitized and are in the National Comedy Center, which is in Jamestown, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a comedy museum. And you can go there and you can sit there and you can go on whatever computer or however they have it set up. And you can glance through her scrapbooks over there.
Wow.
And so,
of course,
all of that is basically digitized.
Right, and of course, Jamestown, Lucy was from there, so that's why the museum's there.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So it's kind of full circle when you think about it. And then she has a little display in there. I think she has her suit, and of course the bow is in there, and some of the other artifacts from the show are there, and the baby Rose. Well, the baby Rosemarie stuff, the shoes and everything that she wore, those are in the Smithsonian.
Wow. Hmm. How cool is that?
Oh,
my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we've got like 20 minutes left. I want to play one more song. I like this one. Unfortunately,
sure.
I don't have just a regular cut. I got it from, you're going to hear the audience in the background. And actually, what I love about it, too, is because she's being introduced and everything. But I love this. I want to play it, the Durante song, who I love, too. I love Jimmy Durante.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's play this one. This is Durante song by Rosemarie.
Next guest is one of the most versatile performers in the entertainment industry. She can sing, dance, and do comedy as easy as you can say Rosemarie. There, I said it, and here she is, Miss Rosemarie.
Thank you. A little while back, they had an award show in Las Vegas where they gave out the award to the best performer in Vegas. And they named the award the Jimmy, in honor of Jimmy Durante, whom I think without a doubt was the greatest performer our business has ever had or ever will have. And they asked if I would do my Durante song. Now, I must explain something. Although I do comedy and I sing, I'm not an impressionist. I don't claim to be. I've never done impressions. But somehow I've always done a Durante song in my act. And I had to get a brand new one for this show. So I'd like to do my new Durante song for you now. And as Jimmy used to say when he'd leave, he'd say, "Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever you are." I'd like to dedicate the song to Jimmy, because we know where he is. Garland sang a bottle of affair with Gable. Others said with Cary Grant they wined and dined. Then old Blue Eyes had his clan, Lois Lane her Superman. But in my clandestine love affair, my lover is so debonair, he leaves all the other love affairs behind. How I love that Jimmy Durante. How I love his decent and dems and does. Gee, I love that Jimmy Durante, 'cause his heart is bigger than his nose. I love the way he did his strut. I love the way he wore his old chapeau, that's a hat. I love the way he played piano, from his forte to his pianissimo. I dig that name. Oh, I love that Jimmy Durante. I love that little twinkle in his eye. Gee, I love that Jimmy Durante. And here and now I'm gonna tell you why. Every time he sang, he sang the kick. He made a million friends from here to Timbuktu. How I love the way that he sang for me. Oh, what we wish you when I'm far away. Well, let me hear that band. And oh, what we wish you when I'm far away. Well, let me hear that band again. Anybody get hurt? I walks into a very classy restaurant, and I orders pheasant under glass. I'd eaten most of the glass and was just about getting down to the pheasant. And I noticed the sign, it says, "Watch your hat and coat." Well, I watched my hat and coat. What happened? Somebody stole my pheasant. Oh, I love that Jimmy Durante. I love the way he sang his song for me. I'll give him that. I'll give him this. I'll do my trick. they'll holler bravo. Songs from the heart will be tremendous.
You know what I love about that? She is just having a ball. Oh, my God.
Oh,
what an entertainer.
Yeah.
What an entertainer.
She loved
it.
Oh,
my God.
Absolutely
yeah.
loved it. And Jimmy always said that she did the best impression of him than anybody.
Oh, God.
And they were good friends. We were good friends with their family, with his family. And his daughter runs a dog rescue out here.
No.
And I found that out later, and my mother had lost her dog, and somebody said, well, you know, Cece Durante has a rescue. And I said, oh, my gosh, you're kidding. So I surprised my mother with the dog, but what was even more important was that it came from Jimmy's daughter.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Well, is that song on the new CD by any chance, Durante's song?
Yes, yes, yes. There is one, and I'm not sure if it's that particular one, but yeah, we had to include a you know, Durante number. It was imperative that we had to. I mean, again, the fans wanted it.
Yeah,
and she. I think on one of the old variety shows, I think she did with Jackie Gleason and Art Carney, all three of them did Durante, all three of them.
Oh, my goodness. That must have been great.
Is, but,
that must have been great to see. Oh, my God. Well,
but,
folks,
you
can get
like
you can get Rosemarie Sings, the complete Mercury recordings and more, full of standards and novelty songs. And if you love Rosemarie, you'll love this CD. Where can they get it, Noopy? Oh, do you mind if I call you?
Oh no, please do. They can go to Amazon right now and order it, or they can go to her webpage, MissRosemarie.com, and all of the links are there. And if you go to her webpage, you can get, I think, a special thing that has a little more pictures and has something signed by me. So if you go to her website, you can get that. And
very nice.
And I'm quite taken aback by the popularity of her fan base and how many people are they're really enjoying this
album.
Oh,
she's a legend.
And
she's a legend. Oh my God, you know.
Yeah.
And don't forget, folks, you could go to Hold the Roses on YouTube to watch the virtual release that they celebrated on August 15th, which was Rosemarie's 100th birthday. So wonderful, wonderful.
Right. And there's some great clips there, too.
I bet. And I wanted to ask you one thing. Is this true that Frank Sinatra knew your mom was pregnant before your father? And what did your father say if it is true?
That's very true. My father was working at NBC. My mother was picking her up. And like I said, the whole show business thing, everybody knew everybody, and
family.
Of course she had known Frank for a long time.
Yeah.
And so she was there to pick him up. Frank walked out. Hi, Rosie. Hi, Frank. You know, Frank, you know, hi, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. She goes, well, Frank, I just found out I'm pregnant. And he says, oh my God, does Bobby know? And she said, no, I'm picking him up right now. And so out walks my father. And Frank's got this silly look on his face, you know, hi, Bobby, you know, and he's like waiting to hear this. And so she goes, well, okay, you know, so I guess she went ahead and said, you know, I just found out I'm pregnant. And my father looked, you know, and so the three of them hugged out in front of NBC Studios. And so, yes, and I don't know if that has anything to do with anything. But I love Frank Sinatra and have loved him forever. And I don't, you know, I mean, truly, I have no idea, but I just, if I had to be starstruck by somebody, it would have to be Frank. It really
was. Wow. And you've actually met him, though, I believe, right? You met him.
Oh, my God, yeah, that's a real long story. But I had started this thing at various places saying, Noopy says hello, because I had met another performer way back when, and the guy had fluffed me off, and I got mad. And I really didn't want to meet Frank, because I was afraid if he said, yeah, kid, you know, go away. Bother me,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But it turned out that we were at a function, and my mother grabbed my arm, and Frank was at a table surrounded by photographers. And so she and I said, no, I really didn't want to meet him. I was really – and she grabbed me. She said, come on, you're going to meet Frank. This is it. And so she walked up, and he turned around. He saw her, hey, Rosie, again, the hug, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
She goes, Frank, want you to meet my daughter, Noopy. And she emphasized Noopy. And he said, hello, and he shook it, and he put his hand out. And nothing's coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, yeah. And, how old were you? How old were you at the time?
Like 21.
Oh, God. After all the stars you've met, and then you're just gobsmacked and Sinatra.
I was like 21 or 22, something like that. It was crazy. And so anyway, she says, Frank, haven't you been getting, now he's still holding on to my hand. And she says, Frank, haven't you been getting any messages that says, Noopy says hello? And he stops and now he's really looking at me. Now I'm petrified. And he says, and she goes, well, this is Noopy. And he goes, oh, my God. He goes, that is great. Oh, my God. And he says, come here, baby. And he grabs me, plants one right on the lips. 8,000 flashbulbs go off. You think I could find that picture? I can't find that damn picture.
Oh, God. It's got to be somewhere.
But he was, and he just looked at me and he said, that was great. He says, that was really great, because I always thought, I don't want him to think I'm some fly-by-night or whatever.
Yeah.
And it turned out that he was gracious. He was wonderful. His secretary loved the story. My husband and I were in Vegas at one point. Frank was at Caesars. And I said, maybe we could go see Frank. So I called the secretary. I didn't call him. I called the secretary.
Yeah, yeah.
And all I had to say was, this is Noopy. And she said, hey, Noopy, how are you? And I said, any chance of seeing Frank? She goes, yeah, can you come to the second show? I said, sure. We sat at Frank's table. It was outstanding. I can't.
Wow.
The guy was the best.
Class
so
act.
He was. I don't care what they say. I adore that man.
Yep, a class act.
He's wonderful.
Yep,
he was wonderful.
Hey, Noopy, have you ever thought about writing your own book about your experiences that you went through?
God, you're not the first person that has said that to me. You know,
you
and
should.
It's so funny because when I've been talking about these things that have happened during my life that I hadn't even thought about half of the stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like my memory's been jogged, and somebody said, you know, it's time for you to write your book.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, God, you know, I don't know. But, you know, it's.
I'm loving the title, Noopy Says Hello.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, her book was called Hold the Roses, because when she won the amateur contest when she was three, and they gave her roses, and she walked off stage and she told somebody, please hold my roses, I have to take my bow. So
at three
as a joke, the guy that did the drawings for the film, he said, you know, he says, if you had a book, what would you title it? And I said, hold my horse, I have to get my ribbon. I don't know. He drew a picture of me holding the horse.
Oh,
but
well, If you did a book,
Newbie
I think
says hello. You're absolutely correct. That's absolutely a better title. That's actually good.
I think that title and your experience of everybody you've met and everything you've been through, what a book that would be. Oh, my God, I'd read it. I'm sure all the fans would read it, too. And you've got fans, too.
Sure
you've got your own fans.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, you know, in my work, I always worked behind the camera because I thought, there's no way I'm going to compete with that.
Right.
So, I actually enjoyed producing and, you know, stuff like that. So we didn't get to touch on that yet.
You're actually a television producer. Are you still doing that type of work or are you retired?
I met my husband at NBC and he worked for NBC for 44 years directing the news over there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is kind of semi-retired and, you know, dealing with towards the end of my mother's life, I was dealing with her health problems.
Yeah.
And also getting the film made at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really, I kind of semi-retired, but every time she would do any kind of an interview or something like that, she would call, you know, she'd say, can you be here? Because she wanted me to check the camera. She wanted me to check the lighting. She wanted me to make sure that, you know, she looked okay.
Everything was,
And so, basically I kind of did that towards the end, but, I did a lot of talk shows, and like I said, I did the one segment on the Four Girls, which I had a crew with me, and you know we shot it, and it was great. But like I said, I was flabbergasted. I couldn't believe.
I was going to ask you other than doing the movie, did you ever produce any of the shows that she did? But yeah, obviously you did, right, on the Four Girls.
Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. The Four Girls, well, trust me, my mother was in charge of the Four Girls Four shows. We have to have a closing number. We have to do, I mean, she was in control.
Well, she knew what was right. She knew what was right.
I just had the camera crew and shot it.
Right. She knew what needed to be done, too, so.
She was, you know, and it turned out that, you know, 9 times out of 10, she was always right. I think she always wanted to kind of direct anyway. She never got a chance to, but she would go sometimes on some of the shows and she would watch them cut it and edit it because, you know, she really kind of liked that.
Yeah.
You know, she loved the business. She truly did. It was not phony. It was not. And I just, you know, someone said, oh, you know, this guy's getting $150 for, you know, an autograph or something. And I said, you know something? I never saw my mother turn down anybody for signing anything. Literally, I've been with her when she's had the fork to her mouth and someone stuck a napkin in front of her and said, could you sign this? And she always did it. She never...
Yeah.
You know, I've seen other celebrities go, I don't sign, you're going to have to go to my website and pay for it or whatever.
Right, right.
And she never, ever, ever did that, ever. She signed everything. She really did. And it was, I always admired her for that because I saw that all the time when I was with her.
And I think
hear her voice and they would recognize her voice.
Immediately. And I think that's another reason why everybody loves her, not only because she was so talented and funny and everything about her whole career, but she was real and, you know, caring to people. She wasn't a phony. She was Rosemarie, you know, that's it. She was not. Like you said, if she was eating, she'd stop to sign an autograph. How many people, you know,
did.
I'm eating, get out of here, you know, get out of here.
Yeah.
She was
And then the other thing about her signing thing, the one thing that I noticed, which I said to her one time, I said, they all felt that they had to touch her. when she would come up and they would ask for an autograph and they put their hand on her shoulder, or they put their hand. And I said, why do they feel that they have to touch you? And she said, why? Does it bother you? I said, well, it kind of does. I said, because they all, you know, while she's signing, they would put their hand on her shoulder. They would do this. And she said, because, she said, the reason is, she said, I'm on television. And she said, people see me. They're in their, you know, pajamas. They're in bed.
Yeah.
This. And she said, they won't do it to a movie star. And I said, why? She said, because they got to pay to see that movie star. And it's different. They got to
closer
pay,
connection.
They got to get into a seat. They got to get into a theater, and they got to watch it. Of course, this is way back when, but before streaming and every other darn thing. So,
right.
She said they have to pay for a ticket, and they have to sit in a theater, and they have to watch them.
Right.
And she said they won't touch them if they see them. They won't touch them because they had to sit in the theater and they had to watch them. And I said, you know, that's really interesting. And she said, I think that's really the reason. That was in her brain. And so she said, it bothers you. I said, well, I just noticed that so many do it.
Yeah.
And I just wondered why they feel they have to feel that she's real.
Right. Or
it's,
like I said,
it's just weird.
Or the fact, like she said, you only go see the movie star in the movies every once in a while, but on TV you see them all the time, and you have a closer connection. You feel more of a bond.
Yeah.
Where you feel closer to them. Maybe I don't know.
I mean that was basically what she told me, but
yeah.
And if you're going to go up and ask someone like a Clark Gable for his autograph, you're not going to put your hand on his shoulder. You're
exactly.
Just not.
Right. And you're not going to get the same reception as you would from Rose Marie either. So that's for sure.
No. But like I said, I have never in my entire life saw her refuse an autograph. Never.
Nice.
And I have been in situations with her where it's been awkward, but she will stop and nine times out of ten, she'll say, do you have a pen? And they'll all go, no. It's like, what? You know, somebody will stick the napkin in front of her. Would you sign this? And she'd go, sure. And then she'd look at him and say, do you have a pen? And they'd get this look on their face.
Right.
It's like, how did you expect her to sign it with with the knife or the fork or something? And they go, well, I'll go find one. And they take off.
And then they come back.
Get a pen.
Oh, my goodness.
I think they expected her to just have one.
Yeah.
Or just to pull it out or something and say, yes, I have a pen.
And
I swear to you, that happened more often than not. She would turn and say, do you have a pen? And they'd go, no.
Be right back.
Well, I can't really sign it without a pen, she said.
Oh, God. Oh, well, Noopy, listen, we've got 5 minutes left, and I want to say thank you so very much for joining me. It was a pleasure speaking with
you.
An honor, I should say. It was wonderful getting to know your mom closer to you, and I've always been a fan of hers as well, and thank you. I can't thank you enough for being here.
Oh, listen, I thoroughly enjoyed it. We really had a good time. We really did.
Yes. Thank you. We always do on Applause Radio Show. You come back anytime. So,
well, you have a wonderful show, Joanne.
Oh, thank you. Folks, go to Amazon, go to MissRosemarie.com, get the new CD, Rosemarie Sings, the complete Mercury recordings and more. Go to YouTube to Hold the Roses to watch the virtual release party of the CD, and so many other things you could get on there about. If you thought we talked about Rosemarie's life tonight, that's probably jam-packed, like she said, with with lots of images that were
so
on the,
much
we're,
more.
We're on the radio. That was virtual, so you could see everything. I'm sure there was a lot. I didn't get to see it yet. I can't wait to see it. And but again, thank you so very much, Georgiana Nupi Rodriguez. I had a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Everybody, Georgiana Nupi Rodriguez, go get the CD. Go check out the documentary, Wait for the Laugh, and hopefully we'll get a book from Nupi soon. And if she does, she better come back here.
Oh, I certainly will. You'll be the first, Joanne, I promise.
Oh, thank you. Nupi, you're too kind. Thank you so very much. Had a wonderful evening. Please take care and stay well, and hopefully we get you back here soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, honey. Thank you. Take care. Everybody, Georgiana Nupi Rodriguez. Thank you, Nupi. Have a good night. Take care.
All righty. You too.
All righty. Bye-bye. Oh, boy.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, man. What a great conversation. I'm telling you. Oh, and Rosemary was just amazing. I had no idea that she started at the age of 3. And if you go back, if you go online and you watch her singing at the age of 3, I mean, I played when she was 8, and you hear how good she sounded. And at the age of 3, she sounded just as good. Only 8, she's got a little more of a mature voice, but not much, because it's only 3 to 8. So, but anyway, oh, man, what a great time. Nupi, thank you so very much. And guys, again, go check out that CD. If you love Big Band music, you love Rosemary. It's got comedy on it, it's novelty songs, and also the great standards that we all know and love from yesteryears. And it's called Rosemary Sings, the complete Mercury recordings and more. You can get it at Amazon or at MissRosemary.com. And also, again, check out the documentary, Wait for the Laugh. And go to Hold the Roses on YouTube, where they did the virtual release of the CD. And they touch on a lot of stuff that we didn't touch here. So, and plus, you got visuals as well. But, yeah, what a great time. Thank you again, Nupi. So join us on Sunday, the 24th, as we welcome musician and songwriter. Sorry, I've got something flying around me. Musician, songwriter Jay Asher. Can't wait to talk to him about his amazing career. All the people he's written songs for, Whitney Houston and more. And October looks really good. We'll have our calendar up hopefully by next week so you can see who's coming up. And I thank you guys so much again for joining me tonight. You could have been doing anything. You could have been doing anything, but you came and hung out with me and Georgiana Nupi Rodriguez. So stick around, folks. Check the calendar. Guarantee we're going to have some great guests for you coming out. Oh, no, who we got coming up in October? We've got Little Ricky. Oh, my God, from I Love Lucy. He's going to be joining us. Keith Theobald, he's going to be joining us. So I'm excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun. So, but join us again on Sunday, September 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern with Mr. Jay Asher. We're going to have a great time. Take care, everybody. I'll close us out with I Like the Sentimental Gentleman from Georgia. Take care, everybody. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Hey, hey, no doubt you've heard about the sweetest man in Dixieland. All say he's hot, he's got just what it takes to make a ladies' man. When he struts of all the strength of Cain, hunts and tie their wives up with a bullet. Cheney's just a sentimental gentleman from Georgia, Georgia. All the time. And when it comes to loving, he's a real professor. Yes, just a Mason Dixon Valentine. Oh, see, those Georgia peaches.